Jack and Jane were newlyweds, and they had a limited budget. As a result, they really couldn't afford to go out for a nice Valentine's dinner at some expensive restaurant. And in order to save some money, Jane thought it would be romantic if they just stayed home and had a nice candlelight meal, and they decided to cook that meal together. Jack agreed that it was a good idea, and so they broke out a cookbook that they had received from one of the parents. They began to look at the different recipes in the book, and after a few minutes of searching, they arrived at a page, and they believed that they actually found a recipe that they would both enjoy. Well, in order to work together and make this a romantic evening at home, Jack encouraged Jane to go ahead and measure out all of the dry ingredients, and he said that he would prepare all of the wet ingredients of this recipe, and then they would bring it all together, and after the ingredients were properly measured and mixed together, the Valentine's dinner was promptly placed into the oven. 45 minutes later, the happy couple was ready to enjoy their homemade meal. Unfortunately, dun dun dun, their dreams of making this delectable dinner quickly disappeared as soon as they realized that their romantic meal was probably the worst thing they'd ever tasted. They tried to figure out what happened, what went wrong, and they quickly realized that, well, they had actually been following two different recipes. You see, Jack had dutifully followed the recipe that he enjoyed that was found on page 44, while Jane had actually been agreeing to follow the recipe on page 45. And so while both of their ingredient measurements were precise and accurate, well, their dinner ended up being inedible simply because they failed to make sure that they were on the same page there in the recipe book. Therefore, this culinary catastrophe was based on their failure to clearly communicate which recipe they were, in fact, following. Well, based on this story, I'd like to point out that this is kind of what's happening in many of our marriages today. There are many couples who are making the same sort of mistake with many of their marital decisions.
So here in our first study, we're going to consider the importance of establishing the right recipe. We'll see how every relationship needs to be on the same page. As we make our way through the study, we're going to learn that first, we establish the right recipe in our marital relationship when we gain understanding. Second, we establish the right recipe in our marital relationship when we give understanding. And third, we establish the right recipe in our marital relationship when we grow understanding.
Well, with this as our outline, let's open our Bibles to 1 Peter chapter 3, because there we find the Apostle Peter. He's encouraging every husband to spend some time gaining understanding of their spouse. As you make your way to 1 Peter 3, I want to take a moment to point out that the couple who fails to make sure that they're on the same page in their relationship, they're also going to end up failing to follow the same relational recipe. And the couple who fails to follow the same relational recipe, they're going to end up experiencing some times of marital incompatibility. Therefore, if we want to make sure that our marriage is always a good pairing, then you'll need to spend some time communicating so that you'll be certain that you're following the same relational recipe. With this as our focus, I want to consider how Peter puts it here in his first epistle. We're here at chapter 3. If you would look with me there at verse 7. There Peter declares, "Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." Now here in this verse, we find Peter, he's continuing to express an exhortation that he began back in verse 1 of this chapter. And there at the beginning of this chapter, he directed wives to be submissive or to yield in cooperation with their own husbands. And so the word likewise there in the beginning of this verse 7, it actually means equally or in the same way. And what this seems to suggest here is that marital submission is a two-way street. So he's saying, hey, wives, yield in cooperation to your husbands. Likewise, husbands, you too ought to be yielding in cooperation with your wife. Therefore, just as the wife has been directed to yield in cooperation or submit to her husband, the husband now is likewise supposed to yield in cooperation with his wife. On top of that, Peter here is calling the husband to dwell with his wife with understanding. Now, I'd like to just spend a second taking an informal survey. Husbands, I'm speaking to you. The hands up would be a yes. How many of you feel like you fully understand your wife? Hands up. Anybody? Any guys want to raise their hand at this point in time? No? 0%. Now, wives, look around the room. Look at your husband now. And if his hand is not up, and it's not, then don't get bummed out if you discover that he doesn't understand you, because he doesn't understand you. Right, honey?
Right.
This word understanding was translated from a Greek word, which is oftentimes used in reference to a deeper and more perfect knowledge, which comes from studious observation. It speaks of the husband becoming a student of his wife. And in light of this definition, Peter seems to be directing every husband here to become the student of their wife so that we might gain a deeper understanding of who they are and what makes them tick and all of that stuff. Listen, this knowledge, it's essential. This understanding that we need to gain, it's crucial for establishing the right recipe in our marital relationship. Now, in order to further explain what I mean, I should first point out that throughout my years in full-time ministry, I've actually provided premarital counseling for many, many, many couples. And one reoccurring issue that I've noticed in much of this premarital counseling, one thing that I've noticed is based on the fact that the average person's perception of their significant other is oftentimes, well, let's just say, askew. It's oftentimes a little bit different than who the person thinks they are. In other words, every spouse has a perception of the person they're married to, and yet our perception isn't always accurate to the person that our spouse truly is. Case in point, back in the 60s, Dennis, you'll remember this show. There was a game show on ABC. It was called The Newlywed Game. And this game show is based on the fact that newlyweds, well, they really don't know each other as well as they might think they know each other. You see, each spouse would be presented with various questions, and they were asked to present the answer that they thought their spouse would give. If their answers then match, well, they would earn some points. And if not, well, then the newlyweds would womp, 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 endure a moment of embarrassment. Listen, this show, it actually ended up making the top 10 list of greatest game shows ever. It's actually number 10 of the greatest game shows ever. And the reason why? It's because it's fun to watch newlyweds getting embarrassed about their misconceptions of one another, right?
So as we consider these common marital misconceptions, it's crucial for every couple to understand that we must spend time gaining understanding of our spouse so that we can make sure we're on the same relational page. If we aren't on the same relational page, then we're kind of like that couple who set out to make a romantic meal while using ingredients from two different recipes. In order to grasp the importance of establishing the right relational recipe by gaining understanding, let's turn to James chapter 4. As you make your way to James chapter 4, I'd like to suggest that many, if not most, of our marital arguments are based on an unwillingness to dwell with our spouse with understanding. When we get into a fight with our spouse, what we're typically saying is this: I don't care to understand your point of view because I'm right and you're wrong. And so, rather than gaining understanding of the other person's point of view, we fight to force our opinions onto the other. This spousal scenario certainly fits into the issue that James was dealing with here in James chapter 4. Beginning in verse 1, James asked, "Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and do not have, you murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss, that you may spend it on your pleasures." In these verses, we find James addressing the sinful root, which ends up producing all manner of wars and fights. And so while he wasn't dealing directly with marital conflicts, I believe this text most certainly applies to our topic. The fights that we have with our spouse are typically based on our selfish desires for personal pleasure. And the arguments that we have at home tend to be based on our unwillingness to ask our spouse for more understanding.
Now, guys, if this sounds like you, I encourage you to spend more time seeking to understand where your wife is coming from. Now, one reason why this is so important is based on the fact that men and women, you might not know this, but we're naturally on different pages. Much like the couple in our intro, they instantly thought they were agreeing on the same recipe, but the reality is they were on two different pages. Anybody feel like that perfectly describes their marriage here today? The answer is probably yes. Yeah, so often we're on two different pages. Research even tells us that men and women have different structures and wiring in their brains, which seems to suggest that men and women may use their brains just a little differently. One researcher affirms that this may explain why men are so dumb. You know, it might explain why so many of the stereotypes that we don't like to actually point out, that there's some truth to it. For example, men tend to score better at tasks that involve orienting objects in space, and women tend to do better at language tests. And from this, it's easy to see why men might be better at, say, reading a map, and women, they talk too much. So, you know, that certainly explains, you know, all of that. But as we consider these differences between men and women, it's easy to conclude that we're going to see many things differently. Brenda and I, when we look at things, I mean, we approach problems just from a completely different point of view. And we're going to approach these problems with a different perspective. We're going to be thinking about those things differently. And so it's easy for us to arrive at two good solutions, and yet different conclusions. What I've personally learned over the years is that when I take the time to actually gain more understanding from Brenda about why she's come to her conclusions and how she arrived there, and when I take the time to try to understand where she's coming from, well, I benefit from this. I not only end up learning more about my wife's perspective, but I also, gain the ability to think outside of my own box, so to speak. Our ability to solve problems is strengthened by the synergy that we enjoy whenever we take the time to make sure that we're both working from the same list of ingredients. When we will take the time to get on the same page through seeking understanding, our marriage is strengthened. And listen, we not only establish the right relational recipe when we take the time to gain understanding of our spouse, but we also establish the right recipe in our marital relationship when we take the time to give understanding to our spouse. Now, with this as our focus, let's turn back to 1 Peter chapter 3, because there we find the Apostle Peter. He's encouraging husbands to now give honor to their wives. But this is our focus again. Look with me there at verse 7. 1 Peter 3, verse 7 again says, "Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." Now, here in this verse, we not only find Peter encouraging husbands to gain understanding of their wives, but he also directs us to give honor to our wives. Now, as we consider what he meant, it'll help us to understand that this word give, it's translated from a Greek word which was used to refer to that which is being distributed and that which is being portioned out. As we consider what he's saying here, he's basically telling husbands here that we've been tasked with the responsibility of distributing or giving out or portioning out honor to our wives. But now, what does that mean? What does it mean to distribute or portion out or give honor to our wives? Well, it'll further help us to understand that the word honor found there in verse 7 was translated from a Greek word which was used to refer to the act of respectful reverence and devoted deference. For example, there are times when we demonstrate deferential respect for another person, say like our boss at work, or maybe an officer who pulled you over because you were speeding, or because you see a soldier in the airport, and you just automatically have deferential respect for that person because of the position that they're in, or because of the office that they've held. And according to Peter here, he's telling us that husbands ought to show this sort of respect for our spouse. We ought to defer to our spouse simply because of the position that they have within our marital relationship. Now, in order to further explain what I mean by this, look with me again there at verse 7, because there Peter's directing husbands to dwell with them with understanding, or live with your wife with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel. Now, as we consider what Peter's saying here, it's important for me to point out that, you know, he's not saying that one is weak and one is strong. And that's how we can tend to read this. Peter, he's a male chauvinist pig, and he thinks that all men are strong and all women are weak. And, you know, if that's how you're thinking about this verse, I would give you a different perspective of this verse. I believe that Peter's saying, hey, you're both weak in the eyes of the Lord. We're all weak vessels in the eyes of the Lord, but for some reason he's telling us that, you know, women are the weaker of the two weak vessels. With that, I would just point out that in most cases, the wife is typically physically weaker than her husband. Physically speaking, the wife is typically weaker than her husband. There are some exceptions to the rule, like in the case of, like, say, Jeremy and Renee, you know. And I've known Dennis and Lori long enough to know that she could take them. And it keeps them in check, that's for sure. So there are exceptions to this rule, but on average, I think we would agree that husbands are typically physically stronger than their wife. But then does that give us the right to force our will on our wives because they're physically weaker than us? Of course not. And yet, how many husbands are attempting to force their will at home through physical domination? It's wrong. It's wrong. We have to see them as equals in the relationship. Men, rather than attempting to physically force your point of view upon your wife because you're physically stronger, Peter's saying, hey, don't do that, but rather respect your wife and give her the honor that she deserves as an equal member in this relationship. Peter's encouraging us to respectfully defer to our wife by showing her that honor that she deserves. And just to make sure that we're on the same page here, Peter reminds us here that in God's eyes, our weaker wife is an equal member of our marriage. As a matter of fact, look with me again there at verse 7. There Peter declares, husbands likewise dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life. Now, to put it more simply, husbands, our Christian wife is a co-heir with us. Christian husbands and Christian wives together, we are co-heirs of God's grace together. It's not that, well, I'm physically stronger, so I get more of God's grace. I'm physically stronger, so, you know, I have more say in this relationship. No, we're co-heirs together. We have an equal place in our relationship. And though we have different strengths and different weaknesses, we have to look at our wife, husbands, as a co-heir, as a co-equal member of our relationship. While it's true that most husbands are physically stronger than their wives, it's also true that husbands and wives are spiritually equal at the foot of the cross. And we got to grasp that here. We're equal at the foot of the cross. We're all just sinners who, through faith in Christ, have received his grace. And so why would we think that, well, we get to force our will on our spouse just because we're physically stronger? Husbands should rather choose to honor their wives by respectfully deferring to their ideas and to their opinions every chance we get. The best way to do this, well, it's by asking them to give us more understanding when we don't understand. When I don't understand how Brenda's coming to certain conclusions, it would be one thing for me to say, well, I don't understand what you're saying, and so my opinion must be the right opinion, and so let me force this on you. Yeah, that would be wrong. It would be better to defer to her opinion by just simply saying, can you give me more understanding of where you're coming from and why you think that that's the solution for this problem? We ought to seek more understanding from our wives, especially whenever we realize that, well, we're no longer on the same page.
And to further grasp the application of the second point, turn to Ephesians chapter 4. And as you make your way to Ephesians chapter 4, I want to point out that many spouses fail to stay on the same page because they don't take the time to give understanding. For example, ladies, how many of you have refused to explain why you're mad at your husband? Simply because in your mind, he should already know why you're mad.
Now, ladies, I mean, we just have to pause there for a moment. Remember earlier when I asked guys to raise their hand if they understood, you know, and they didn't? You can't pull the whole, if you don't know why I'm mad, well, I'm not going to tell you why. You ought to know. We don't know. It'll help if you told us. Go ahead.
Yep. So, if you're mad at your husband and he doesn't understand why, then please give him understanding by taking the time to explain it to him.
Slowly. With small words.
So, another way we might fail to give our spouse the right understanding is by hiding behind a phony facade. It will help us to understand that the person who pretends to be someone that they're not in order to attract another person is putting on a phony facade. And according to recent research, 81% of those who are looking for love online are guilty of this very thing. For example, there are many men who have admitted to lying online about their profession, their height, their weight, their wealth, and famous people they allegedly know. And women are guilty of the same thing by lying about their age, their physique, their profession, also about knowing certain celebrities, and by saying they have an assistant or employees.
Now, that's one thing that confuses me. Of all the things that you're going to lie about online, you have employees or an assistant. I was confused by the research, but okay.
From this, we can see that the average person has no problem attempting to attract others with a phony facade. And not only does this happen online, but it's also common for people to present a phony facade as they engage in a dating relationship. One researcher points out that daters lie to meet the expectations of what they think their audience is looking for. That being the case, many people have a faulty perception of the person they're dating because the person they're dating has failed to give a true understanding of who they are. And it's sad to say that many couples enter into a marital covenant after falling in love with a phony facade. And believe me, when I tell you that those who are attracting others for a phony facade are failing to establish the right relational recipe. So if you've been guilty of engaging in these deceptive distortions, then I encourage you to follow Paul's admonition found in Ephesians chapter 4. Look with me there at verse 25, where Paul directed the Christians in Ephesus to put away lying and let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. In this verse, we find Paul encouraging the Christians in Ephesus to be honest with one another. And the reason why is because they all belong to the same church body. It didn't make good sense for them to lie to one another. Now, if this is true for the entire church, then how much more important is this for every couple who has become one flesh through the sacred sacrament of Christian matrimony?
That's right. If we're supposed to speak the truth to one another in the context of church life, how much more important is it for us to speak the truth in a dating relationship, if you're dating, or in your marriage, if you're married? We need to speak the truth so that we're not deceiving the person that we're supposed to be in love with. And based on this, it's not only important for husbands to honor their wives by attempting to gain understanding from them, but it's equally important for the husband and the wife to try to get on the same page by taking the time to give understanding to one another through honest communication. We need to have honesty in our relationship if we're going to give understanding. As husband and wife set out to speak the truth to one another, well, they're going to be using the right ingredients. They're going to use those best ingredients for establishing the right relational recipe. Therefore, we want to encourage every couple here today, if you've been engaging in this phony facade, if you've been attempting to present yourself as someone that you are really not, it's time to stop. We want to encourage every person to honor the other by speaking the truth. And we have to speak the truth with love. But we need to speak the truth with one another. And listen, we not only establish the right relational recipe when we take the time to gain understanding, and we not only establish the right recipe in our marital relationship when we take the time to give understanding, but we also establish the right recipe in our marital relationships when we grow understanding. Now, in order to explain what I mean by that, let's turn back to 1 Peter chapter 3, because there we find the Apostle Peter. He's encouraging husbands to cultivate understanding within the marital relationship. But this is our focus. Look with me again there at verse 7. There, Peter writes, "Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." Now, here in this verse, we find Peter, he's helping us to understand that the husband who fails to dwell with their wife with understanding will soon discover that their prayers have actually been hindered. It's important to point out that the word hindered there at the end of the verse there, it's translated from a Greek word which was used in reference to a dead tree branch that's been cut down. So imagine you've got a fruit tree in your yard and there's a branch that's no longer bearing fruit and it's dead, and before it falls and you know, hurts someone or wrecks your home or car, you cut it down. You cut it off. It's no longer bearing fruit, so cut it down. That's the word hindered. In this sense, think about it. The prayers of the husband who is failing to cultivate understanding in their marriage, those prayers will be cut off like a dead, fruitless tree branch. And so husbands, you can pray all day long, "Lord, change her, fix her." But he's not listening. Those prayers are cut off because it's fruitless. That being the case, Peter was encouraging every Christian husband to continue cultivating a culture of understanding within the marital relationship so that our prayers might be heard and answered according to the will of God. More simply put, husbands, we've been called to grow understanding through communication in our marriage so that our communication with God might not be hindered. It's as if God's saying, "Okay, if you're not going to listen to your wife, I'm not going to listen to you." Think about that. He's basically saying, "Let's see how you like it." In order to grasp how we can fail then to grow the fruit of marital understanding through healthy communication, turn with me to Proverbs chapter 26. As you make your way to Proverbs 26, I want to take a moment to point out that there are many husbands who are failing to cultivate a culture of communication within their marital relationship. And they do this by taking offense every single time their wife expresses an opposing opinion. It's like we're completely offended that they just don't have the same opinion as us. And how could they? Rather than seeking to grow understanding by giving their wife space to freely share her opinions, this sort of combative husband sets out to try to change her mind by debating over every disagreement. And we see every disagreement as a hill that we have to take and fight and win control of. If that sounds like you, husband, then after a while, listen, the wife is going to attempt to avoid every conflict with her contentious husband by just keeping her opinions to herself. If your wife is no longer really sharing her heart with you, if she's no longer really talking with you and having open communication with you, then it's possible that you've just completely destroyed those open lines of communication by arguing about every little thing. Now, guys, if this sounds like you, then I hope you'll consider what Solomon wrote here in Proverbs chapter 26, because look with me there at verse 21. There Solomon writes, "As charcoal is to burning coals and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife." In other words, Solomon's saying, hey, look, a quarrelsome man who argues about everything is quick to start a fight, and that's comparable to how easy it is for a hot ember to set coal and wood on fire. If you throw a hot ember into some charcoal or into a batch of wood, it's going to catch on fire. And just like a woman comes home and shares an opinion, and all of a sudden it's not the same opinion as the husband, and he goes off. How sad. It must be difficult for wives to dwell with a contentious husband. And guys, listen, I know how easy it is for us to think that we're always right about everything, because, I mean, we are, right? Yeah, the reason why we have an opinion is because we think it's the right opinion. But just because you have an opinion doesn't mean it's the right opinion. And it certainly doesn't mean that it's the only opinion. It might be the right opinion, but it might not be the only opinion. There could be another opinion that is also true. So let's be careful when we think that we're always right and ready to argue about every opinion. We must remember that the contentious husband who fails to grow understanding by cultivating a culture of communication is going to end up hindering their own communication with the Lord. At the same time, I would also point out that, ladies, you can be just as contentious as us men sometimes. Right, Brenda?
Yes. Okay.
But this is our focus. Awkward. With that, I want you to turn back one chapter to Proverbs chapter 25.
Okay. So here in Proverbs chapter 25, where Solomon addresses the conflict that is caused by a contentious wife, look with me there at verse 24, where Solomon writes, "It is better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman." In other words, Solomon tells us that it would be better to live on a porch than inside the home where a quarrelsome woman is constantly nagging. And in Proverbs...
Not that I would know, I'm just...
And in Proverbs chapter 21, Solomon took it even further by insisting that it's better to dwell in the wilderness than with a contentious and angry woman.
Any of you guys sleep in the wilderness last night? Just to... get a good night's sleep? No?
So bad. Okay, so as we consider these wise sayings of King Solomon, it's important for us to understand that the couple who fails to cultivate a culture of Christ-like communication within their marriage will also end up hindering their communication with the Lord. You can pray all day for the Lord to change your spouse, but the Lord isn't listening. Your prayers will continue to be hindered until the day you decide that it's time to stop quarreling about every little thing, and it's time to start growing relational understanding with open lines of communication. With this as the goal, I want to present you with a simple philosophy, which will help you to stop quarreling about every conflict and debating over every disagreement. When we choose to be contentious, we are actually approaching the opposing opinion with the belief that there must be a winner and there must be a loser at the end of the argument. And with this mentally, many spouses approach conflict with the philosophy that they must win the point. However, according to Peter, there's no winner in this scenario. Instead, there are only two losers. We must remember that the husband and wife have become one flesh, and that every win-lose scenario will actually become a lose-lose situation for every marriage. I would encourage every couple to seek a win-win scenario where both opinions are valued. In this scenario, the couple will win as they cultivate a culture of open communication, which causes our understanding to grow. And as we grow understanding within our marital relationship, we end up establishing the right recipe as we learn how to create solutions that are based on a balance of both opinions.
That's, just excellent point, Brenda, because the one flesh nature of our relationship with our spouse means that if one of us loses, we both lose. And I've encouraged many couples to think about their marriage as a team. You know, when you're looking at a team, whether it's, football or football, there's different players, there's different I'm struggling to find the right words because I don't watch either personally, but but in every team sport, you have different players that have different positions, and they're all valuable for the team's victory. And looking at our marriage, you know, we're different players with different positions in this marriage, and yet we both have to win for us to win. So looking to win the point over your spouse is always going to be a losing scenario for the marriage. Now, as we begin to conclude this first study, I want to wrap up our time together by pointing out that those of you who are failing to establish the right relational recipe, and throughout this study you've realized, man, I'm messing this up. I don't want you to be discouraged. I want you to understand that we can quickly turn this around. I remember the first 5 years of our marriage was tough because, you know, Brenda's really, really stubborn. And so am I. We're both very opinionated, very stubborn, very driven people. And it presented difficulties in the first 5 years of our relationship. And I remember we went to get some counsel about 5 years in, and we just didn't understand. We weren't compatible. We weren't, you know, getting along. We were struggling. It was, you know, every, you know, different opinion was the beginning of an argument. And I just remember sitting down with an older, wiser couple and just getting some good marriage counseling. And that night, our marriage changed. And I remember getting it. I remember realizing that, you know, I had been acting like I was standing upon the pillar of the perfect husband and looking down at Brenda, wondering why she wasn't also standing on that pillar of the perfect wife. And I thought that, well, I needed to help her to understand what the Bible says about what it means to be the perfect wife. And really all I was doing was crushing her and making her feel like she, you know, wasn't good enough. And it was just a tough time for us. But I remember, you know, that night walking away realizing that I don't get to critique her about, you know, whether she's the perfect spouse or not until I actually become the perfect spouse. I don't get to comment about where she fails as the perfect wife until I actually become the perfect husband. And thankfully, that was last week. So I wanted to spend the rest of my time airing a few grievances. But honestly, you know, I told Brenda that night, I said, you know, our marriage is going to change tonight because I see what I'm doing now. I see that I'm not dwelling with her with understanding. You know, I'm trying to force my opinions on her and I'm trying to make her into something that she's not. And, you know, I remember just telling her across the counseling table, I said, things are going to change tonight. And she said, we'll see. But listen, our marriage did turn around that night because I walked away from that counseling session realizing, you know, what I needed to be doing differently in order to bring honor to my wife. Our marriage turned around that night, and your marriage can turn around today. It really can. You might have come today and you've been thinking, this is it. This is our last chance. And if so, I'm here to tell you, I'm glad you're here. Because your marriage can turn around today. With that, I want to wrap up our time together by pointing out that those of you who need to really get your marriage in order, I just want to encourage you to start establishing the right relational recipe. And this relational restoration begins when husband and wife decide to get on the same page. And we do this by gaining understanding, by giving understanding, and by growing understanding of one another. Then once we're on the same page, then we can begin to take all the ingredients that are necessary for you know, just creating that beautiful marriage. And we've got, you know, three more sessions coming up, and each of the guys have been given different ingredients to talk about. And so if you're wondering, well, what are these ingredients? Well, the speakers are, in the next three sessions, will be sharing that information with you. And so I encourage you guys and gals to take notes, prayerfully consider what's being said, and listen, if you get offended about something, then that's probably what you need to be working on. Right? So in closing, I just want to point out that the Apostle Peter, here in this text, let's not miss this, he's actually addressing the verse here to who? Husbands. Husbands. And the reason why is because the Lord has called us to be leaders in our home. And so you can say, well, when she starts doing this, then I'll start. No. It's not what it says. Husbands, dwell with your wives with understanding. I would argue that Peter's calling Christian husbands to take the lead by choosing to gain understanding and give understanding and grow understanding as we dwell with our wives. Therefore, husbands, I encourage you in closing to establish the right recipe in your marital relationship so that the Lord will hear your prayers. Then as the Lord hears your prayers and begins to answer those prayers, I'm going to guess that those prayers will go from Lord, fix her to Lord, fix me. Right? And I believe that's a prayer that the Lord wants to answer. And so gain understanding and give understanding and grow understanding so that your prayers will be heard. And as he answers your prayers, he's going to bless your marriage beyond anything that you could ever imagine. I know for a fact because it happened for us. Right, honey?
Right.